Welcome back to TechNet Radio. Tommy Patterson welcomes Senior Service Engineer Kunal Kashyap to the show as they discuss how Microsoft IT uses direct access to enable workers to work remotely. Tune in as they chat about how MSIT deployed direct access globally using Windows Server 2012 and Windows 8, and how by implementing this solution they were able to reduce support costs, increase business agility, and improve remote management for IT. Tommy, the mic is yours.
Great. Welcome to today's show, TechNet Radio. We are talking about direct access on the show today with me. I'm Tommy Patterson. We've got Kunal Kashyap, and he is on our Senior Service Engineer working in the division of Microsoft IT. We're going to talk about how we deployed Server 2012, Windows 8 Direct Access, and how we changed the way we do work at Microsoft, saving some money here and there, and also a little bit of talk about VPN as well. So, Kunal, welcome on the show.
Cheers.
Great. So you've got around 13 years experience across service delivery, operations, product management, that kind of thing. Looks like you came over from Intel, what, about 13
correct.
Years ago? Is that right?
That is correct.
Great. Glad to have you on board. So before we went into Windows 8, you know, I know Steve Ballmer got up on stage and was screaming at everybody last year, we're going to Windows 8, we're going paperless, we're doing all these things. It was very exciting. And I knew behind the scenes there was an individual who was crammed into a closet that was not allowed to get out until he got everything right. I'm guessing that individual was you, so that you could make sure everything worked for everybody at Microsoft before it could come out. Is that right?
Sure. You know, Steve went up on stage and pitched everyone to, you know, upgrade to Windows 8 and evangelize our new product offerings. And direct access has been for employees a critical means of, you know, illustrating productivity on the road and so on. You know, it's been great working with the product groups to deploy the solution. And I'm hoping it actually delivers to the productivity benefits that we hope it does.
I know it certainly helped a lot of us, especially the road warriors who are out delivering events and that kind of thing. So for those people who don't know quite what direct access is, or maybe you're still on VPN, talk a little bit about what that solution entails. And then, you know, let's get into, after that, we'll get into how we deployed it.
So direct access for those, for the uninitiated is, one of our key remote connectivity offerings, is the primary solution we offer to Microsoft employees internally. It enables seamless connectivity, you know, no user interaction required. You turn on your PC and boom, you're ready to go. If you're on the road, it's as good as being in an office in terms of your connectivity experience. It uses two-factor auth, it's highly secure, it's very robust in terms of its architecture. You know, we have never in the last 2 years experienced a service outage of any sort. And based on feedback from users, it's been awesome for them.
Great. So traditionally in the past, companies would deploy a VPN tunnel, maybe from some type of VPN concentrator or a VPN work. Direct access comes into the picture now and says, you know what, we don't need the VPN tunnel. The networking and the changes required by VPN sometimes was too much for some people to handle, or you know, had its own problems that came along with it. Direct access gives end users rights to resources that they have rights to based on their user ID, and then that two-factor authentication being their domain username and password, and then some type of security key like we have built into our digital IDs.
Sure.
So great stuff. When you went into this, you had to plan. We already had direct access from a Windows 7 2008 server perspective. Can you talk a little bit about that environment, what it
sure.
was like, and
sure.
what it was like to go away from that?
We've always offered users two solutions, you know, direct access being the primary service and VPN being the failover secondary option. VPN caters to scenarios which direct access does not. primarily, you know, your home, non-domain giant PC, etc., whereas direct access is your primary service for your domain giant, you know, corporate managed laptop. Direct access being always on does not require any user intervention in the sense that you don't need to initiate a connection. It just comes on automatically. Now, the progression from our previous flavor of direct access to the Windows Edge direct access deployment that we just completed has been a huge learning experience, primarily because our previous implementation of direct access required a little bit of custom work to make it, one, scalable, to make it you know, seamless in terms of two-factor auth. We had to do some custom work, but our Windows 8 direct access implementation is pretty much out of the box. So any customer who chooses to use Windows Server 12 and Windows 8 is going to have the same experience that we've had, you know, in terms of deployment, in terms of the user benefits and things, without having to go through the learning curve that we had to moving from one solution to another.
So I'm guessing there were some challenges, especially in the 7 days, with someone logging in remotely and hitting a authentication point that may not have been geographically the best place for them to hit. How did you get around that?
So I'm going to correct you there. So with Windows 7 Direct Access, it was pretty similar in terms of the geographic distribution of our infrastructure footprint, though we have expanded the footprint to cater to more unique scenarios that users gave us feedback on, in the sense that, you know, there were user concentrations in various dev centers around the world, and they were, you know, by virtue of local network issues or ISP connectivity and things, were experiencing latency when they were reaching the direct access servers in the data centers. So what we did do was expand the geographic footprint of the infrastructure to ensure that they had a local access point to connect to, which, you know, sort of helps, especially when they're trying to get local resources, a SharePoint form at their site. You know, they don't need to get to the data center and back, and then, you know, from the form back to the data center and to their machines. They're able to, you know, have a faster, smoother experience, especially when accessing local resources. One of the benefits of moving to Windows 8 Direct Access with Server 12 was that we were able to optimize the infrastructure footprint considerably, even though we expanded the geographic coverage. So, you know, that's a twofold thing. You know, the coverage expands, but the footprint reduces. So the number of server hardware that we needed reduced considerably by virtue of the fact that, you know, DA is built into Server 12 and on the client side into Windows 8. Also, obviously, hardware has improved over time. So we are able to provide a higher capacity with a lower footprint.
Okay.
So it's been savings all around.
Great, great. So when we say reduce support costs, is that where we're coming from a hardware perspective, or is there other things we should consider?
Multiple aspects. So I'm not going to talk only about support costs. I'm going to talk about overall costs. So in terms of overall costs, yes, the hardware perspective is one thing, you know, hosting charges and things. We reduced our footprint by about 50%. Also, by virtue of the fact that the direct access on the client side is built into the OS, it didn't require any custom coding at our end. It doesn't require, obviously, with custom coding and custom scripts and things, if there is an inherent increase in support requirements, you know, because the variables are just phenomenal. So being built into the OS, it reduces, you know, all these variables down pretty low. It makes the whole experience much easier from a user perspective because they don't actually need to run a setup anymore. It just gets deployed by group policy. And so there are savings all around. You know, we projected about $1 million per year in terms of savings.
Wow, that's pretty substantial. So that gives us, you know, that support side is covered. We you know, maybe they can now focus on other types of support calls and such like that. Sure. When it comes to administration, So for server administration, is there a team dedicated to these particular servers, or are they wrapped now into the full support model? How does that work?
So our again, by virtue of the fact that it's very integrated into the overall, you know, server-side OS, client-side OS, in terms of pure support, we do have a team. But we've been able to optimize on the team resources also in terms of cost projections within MSIT's implementation. We've gone down to about $1.50 per user per month, right, from about four IT Connection Manager timeframe. So substantial cost savings in that area in terms of Tier 3 support, engineering support, and so on. So, yes, we do have a team. We have a team which is responsible for both Tier 3 escalations from users and the server support. But, again, you know, by virtue of it being very integrated, the amount of support tickets for servers also has come down.
Excellent. So, for our customers' sake, it sounds like we're not having to hire a new headcount or maybe keep that one dedicated person that was working on network connectivity around doing that. They can be now focused on some of the more business impact applications and delivery. Is that right?
Sure. So we're constantly trying to improve our service, constantly trying to optimize where possible. We're constantly improving our tools and monitoring efforts around ensuring that the service remains 99.99 available and or higher. So yes, the same resource is able to do more is a win.
Great. All right, so we got increased business agility. We've got where, like you were saying, the data center, that example, having people in a data center accessing resources in their own data center, maybe not having to have multiple hops.
Sure.
But then it also gives us agility in other ways, maybe disaster recovery and such. Can you talk about that?
Yep. So, DR is an awesome example. So the way direct access is architected within our environment is that one data center going down would not impact the service. We've seen that in multiple locations where there have been, natural calamities and things. Users were advised to stay home, be safe while continuing to be productive simply by virtue of the fact that, they had direct access. It was always on. If their local ingress point went down, if their, whatever their closest data center site went down, they were automatically rerouted to an alternate location. There was very little manual intervention required. Very little or none in terms of manual intervention required for them to be able to continue to be productive while offsite. So Japan was an example. The floods in Thailand were another example. We expanded direct access availability to cover vendor resources, people who don't usually use direct access or were not approved to do so for these situations, and they were able to remain productive even when remote. As long as they had an internet connection, they were good to go. Most recently in the East Coast storm season, we had people working from Starbucks, because they lost power at home, they lost internet access at home, went down to their local Starbucks or wherever, and they were able to work as if they were in office.
Right, with better coffee. So
I am so sure, yeah.
So we talked a lot about direct access. You also made some new improvements around VPN. Can you talk through those? I guess there still is a need to have VPN. For some people, I have a Microsoft Surface that's not domain joined, but I still need to access some of my stuff on the servers from time to time. So it's good to still have VPN. Talk a little bit about what you did there.
So with VPN now, like I said at the start of our conversation, VPN manages to deliver remote connectivity for certain scenarios, which direct access does not cater to. So VPN, for example, in a non-domain joint scenario, you're visiting, you know, on vacation, you're visiting your grandmom, she's got an old desktop PC, and, you know, you remember you need to get something out, delivered, whatever, access some resources on CarpNet. In that scenario, VPN would be your go-to solution. You know, pretty easy. You just download the client, as long as you have a smart card reader to authenticate with and your smart card with you, you should be able to use it. VPN also allows the new Surface RT devices to connect to Corp. So a consumer device being able to be used in a corporate setting, it sort of expands the Microsoft desire to extend productivity into the consumerization space. So bring your own device scenarios, consumerization of IT scenarios are going to be able to leverage various flavors of VPN that we are working on right now.
Great. So let's talk a little bit about, we all have these smart cards that we carry around with us. They have our IDs embedded into them. That's part of our two-factor security. But there's another way we can do this, right? A virtual way. So yep. How do you guys implement this?
So with Windows 8, was the first OS capable of leveraging what is called a virtual smart card. So part of our two-factor auth, you know, for remote connectivity, we deployed virtual smart cards globally. Virtual smart cards are effectively a virtual version, a copy of your physical smart card located in your machine. It is tied to your machine. So for every machine you want to leverage a virtual smart card on, you have to create a new virtual smart card. Now, these virtual smart cards, like I said, part of our two-factor auth piece, they allow you to connect using direct access or VPN without actually having to insert your physical smart card. So the first time you create a virtual smart card, you would have it signed with your physical smart card, your car creds, and it would get created and stored on your TPM, right? After that, for direct access, as long as you logged in using your virtual smart card, direct access would be seamless, right? It would just kick in. If you logged in using your corp creds, direct access would ask for your second factor of auth, and you could bind it to your virtual smart card, same as you bind it to your physical smart card if it is inserted, and authenticate using that. For VPN, again, it's a huge win by virtue of the fact that you can VPN in without having to insert your physical smart card. So all the new Windows 8 devices, by virtue of them being tablets or, you know, really slim form factor type devices, don't necessarily come with inbuilt smart card readers. So in that case, the first time you want to set a virtual smart card up, you plug in a USB card reader, set a virtual smart card up, and then you're good to go for a year. Yes.
Is that smart virtual smart card, is that something that your PC has to be joined to the domain in order to get installed?
Nope. Not necessarily. You need to install the certificate manager bits, which we have posted on various locations, both internal and external, for remote users to leverage. So, you know, you install those bits so that your machine knows how to deal with a virtual smart card or create one. You create one, it gets stored in your machine, and you're good to go, like I said, for a year.
Great. So as long as I have the original smart card, I can create the virtual smart card and then not need that physical smart card except for maybe when I'm walking in the buildings.
Yep.
Excellent.
I mean, that is likely the future of authentication, where, you know, your machine has a certificate on it, which sort of you authenticate against, and you're good to go for accessing, you know, online sites, you know, anything that uses ADFS and so on. So remote sites, on-prem, off-prem, whatever, as long as you can authenticate using your virtual smart card, you're good to go.
Okay, so we've talked about the security side. We touched on the networking side, but for me, when I was a server administrator, right now I'm a DPE guy. I work out in the field a lot. That means I'm on blogs, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on a lot of things non-Microsoft related, especially when I'm studying up on something I don't, you know, may not have heard about before. How are we doing with keeping out that type of traffic from traversing these these tunnels that we create.
Sure. So direct access leverages split tunneling. So what happens is that only CorpNet traffic comes internal to CorpNet. So any internet traffic would go out directly through your internet connection to the internet. Only traffic that is identified as being within Corp would, you know, sort of come in over the DA tunnels. Now, that has multiple benefits, makes for a better user experience. You know, you don't want to get to your, maybe, say you're in China, you know, a local news site, you know, you don't have to want to come into Corp and then back to China news site and back again. You know, all those multiple hops kind of impact the user experience. But if we, with split tunneling, the benefit being internet traffic gets routed to the internet, Corp traffic gets routed to Corp, saves us a bunch of bandwidth both ways, and obviously improves the user experience. It's been kind of huge. We especially in the ICO one sites and things, you know, the savings around, you know, in terms of user experience, or the savings around having to set up dedicated circuits for ICO one, which is internet connected offices, small offices sites, has been substantial. And then the user experience also improves, like I said. Yep.
So, you know, people come into our facilities, the bandwidth that we were already taking up for normal work-related activity, they may not see that as hit as hard, because now we're actually making sure that internet connection that's at that local facility goes out through the internet connection and not back through corporate.
Yes, that is correct. That is correct.
Very good. Well, Canal, we've talked over all of these things. Any closing thoughts that you want to leave us with today?
So direct access has been very well received by my users. Again, I cater to Microsoft internal users. You know, initially we had a few hiccups, you know, getting this deployed. Obviously, it's a really new solution. You know, there was a huge learning curve for Windows 7 Direct Access. Then we moved on to deploying Windows 8 Direct Access. It was in the interim period where we were doing the switchover that, you know, we kind of realized the dependence that has been created on Direct Access. Users who are using it find it extremely easy to use, extremely beneficial. A huge improvement on their work life, you know, in terms of they don't need to think about connecting. They're auto-connected, always on. They can work from wherever they choose to. They don't need to worry about, you know, hey, I need my smart card. I forgot my smart card. You know, I need to trigger this connection, and so on and so forth. So it's from a user perspective, and that's what I'd like to measure myself by. It's been a huge win.
Great. So this has been a great show. I know that I'm going to rush off now and make sure virtual smart cards are enabled on my PCs, because I'm all Windows 8 now in my house. For people who are wanting to get their feet wet or try this out, we've got the virtual labs. We've got I've got lab guides on my side on virtuallycloud9.com. You can also join us in the Early Expert series. That's at aka.ms/early-expert. And we can walk you through those lab experiences and get you up to get you up and running for direct access and all the different things that come with Windows Server 2012. Again, thanks, Canal, today for being on the show. Really enjoyed it. And that's a wrap.
Cheers. My pleasure.